Translation: the Supersoul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. Purport by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. There are 8,400,000 species of living beings, beginning from the highest intellectual being, Brahma, down to the insignificant ant. And all of them are enjoying the material world according to the desires of the subtle mind and gross material body. The gross material body is based on the conditions of the subtle mind, and the senses are created according to the desire of the living being. The Lord, as Paramatma, helps the living being to get material happiness because the living being is helpless in respects in obtaining what he desires. He proposes and the Lord disposes. In another sense, the living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord. They are therefore one with the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, the living being in all varieties of bodies have been claimed by the Lord as his sons. The sufferings and enjoyments of the sons are indirectly the sufferings and enjoyments of the father. Still, the father is not in any way affected directly by the sufferings and enjoyment of his sons. So he is so kind that, so Krishna is so kind that he constantly remains with the living being as Paramatma and also tries to convert the living being toward real happiness. Om Jnanata Mandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshusha Militam Jena Tasma Sigur Vena Maha Si Chaitanya Mano Mista Mista Vitam Jena Bhutale Swam Rupa Gnama Yam Dhananti Swapantikam Namo Mishvara Agis Vada Bhutale Shmari Shara Goga Vinda Swam Namo Mishvara Agis Vada Bhutale Shmari Bhakta Vadanta Swam Nitanavane Namaste Sarasati Devam Gauravani Vacharani Nivishisha Shuri. Thank you for inviting me to come to Bhaktivedanta Manor today, and I shall try to speak something of what I've heard from our acharyas and what I've researched. After all, what do I know? I'm dependent on other beings for knowledge. That is unlike the current system of knowledge, of course. The current system of knowledge in the material world is to produce papers. What's it called? Citations, right? Huh? Any scientists here? There is one scientist, isn't there? Who is that devotee who's a PhD and he's not here? Doesn't he have a PhD in biology, some devotee? Ryan. Huh? Ryan. Where's Ryan? We need him right now. Huh? Now he's gone, just when we need him, because this is a scientific, anyway. So yeah, the way of the materialists, or how do they get their knowledge? By writing papers. That's their process. They write papers and pass their papers around. They're very intelligent people, actually. They're very intelligent people. And they study in many different fields, but their process of understanding the material world and the way and the environment around them is one of observation and interpretation. If you think about it, just like Charles Darwin, he observed something in the Galapagos Islands. And then he interpreted what he saw and speculated on the matter further. In fact, if you ask a Darwinist to You ask him, what is the earliest point of life? They don't want to know. They say, no, this has nothing to do with Darwinism. Darwinism is simply an observation of creatures on the Galapagos Islands and how they might have come to be. But you ask him, what is the earliest point of the production of these animals? And they have no answer. Their answer will be, no, that's not what Darwin was discussing. He was only discussing the other parts where the creature was evolving. And of course we know that the records of the fossils are not actually in linear line at all. There's no linear line of fossils showing transition from one species to another. So therefore another scientist came up with a theory that actually it's not linear, it's more like a bush, more like a tree with branches coming off, and so the transitions don't take place in linear line, they kind of spread out somehow or other. And Sariputta Prabhu, he makes the point, well, that's all very well, but to trace one point of the development with another point and to link them all together is nigh on impossible. So the reason we're bringing these points up is because here Krishna is he is making clear statements, and the sadhus and the shastra makes clear statements about how this creation comes about. And this is a great mystery. It's a very intelligent question that one might put. How is this place coming about? How are these bodies developing? So the one process is receiving knowledge from those in the know, and the other process is to, by jnana, by trying to intellectualize and trying to figure out. But the empirical process, being that it relies on the material senses, is limited. And this is the point that we will always bring up to scientists, that they're very intelligent, they try to figure out, and there's no harm. It's called, in our system, it's called like jnana, isn't it? Jnana, trying to figure out, what is this? Who is life? How did this all come about? So this process is, we can appreciate them to some level. But what they tend to do is to see that as the only process. And by accepting knowledge from theological sources, they will not accept that. They say, no, this is laziness. This is lazy. You should figure it out for yourself. And you should become very intelligent and write these papers. And you should be like that. If you do like that, then you can join our league of intellectuals, and then we'll listen to you seriously. Otherwise, we won't listen to you seriously, because you're just religionists, and you're simply accepting something blindly. That is their argument. So, how do we counteract such an argument? Because we have to preach Krishna consciousness to people, isn't it? We have to accept their point. And we have to say, yes, it's true. It's good to analyze the material world, and it's nice idea. But the speculative, our answer really is that the speculative process has limits. The empirical process with limited senses cannot possibly understand such detail. But what their papers are going to be doing is, they hope one day they will increase their knowledge more and more and more, and then come to understand. Now, is that a justified method? I mean, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, doesn't he, that the one who tries to understand through his own method, he refers to the impersonalist. But after many, many lives, you may surrender, isn't he? He says, what's that verse? Yes. Mahunam jamade ante gyanavan mandipatante. Yeah. After many, many lives of that type of thinking, he may surrender to me. So we can give credit somewhat to the scientists in their search. And they'll be looking at energies when they do this. Like quantum, they go into the microscopic quantum world and they try to... in fact, they use that world with their latest theories that, you know, like punctuated equilibrium, it's called, where they can't see the linear lines, they can't see the fossil changes, therefore they think, actually, no, this did not happen by gradual changes in transitions. What happened was there was a malfunction. This is what they think. There must have been a malfunction, and therefore in the quantum world or the microscopic world, things suddenly change, and therefore, and species suddenly, and this is another thing they come up with. So yeah, very interesting stuff. Okay, could be. But it's not definite knowledge. So that is something we have to contend with. And fortunately, we have the books of Sariputta Prabhu, who studied this matter very deeply. And it's a very, very essential science for the Hare Krishna movement. If we don't take seriously the work of Sariputta and what he was doing, I think that is one of the prime movers of the Hare Krishna movement, then we are sadly mistaken. And unfortunately, the budget of the Bhaktivedanta Institute has been cut drastically over the years, and its importance has somewhat faded, which is a great shame, because Srila Prabhupada himself said that you take as much money as you like, we will give you. Because it's such, when you think about it, it's so important, isn't it? Isn't that the really important matter? If you're going to clarify or to, you know, make a list of what the most important thing is, well, in the Western world, you're in Oxford and Cambridge, you've got one of the science base. From England, Charles Darwin came and went to the Galapagos. So this is very, very important work. And I know it's going on to some extent, isn't it? In fact, I think Kundalini Prabhu is doing some work here, isn't he? With some of this work, isn't it? Do you know about this? Mm. So that's good. But that could be increased more over. So that's the scientific point of view. The material scientists will look at the world in a very empirical way, naturally. And actually is quite proud of them, in one sense, that they're considering that we will figure everything out for ourselves. So this descending process. Well, Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Chana Prakriti Sui Se Cha Chala Chalam Hetanana Kuntaya Jagat Vi Paripatade. I am the source. All moving and non-moving creatures, this material energy is my energy. It works under my direction and produces moving and non-moving creatures, and it works under my rule. So this is the declaration of Krishna. Now, why can the scientists not accept that? Yes, there are higher energies in play here. You can even think of Krishna, if you like, in an impersonal way. Because he has many, many energies. So Krishna, although he is the Supreme Personality of God and he resides in the realms of Goloka Vrindavan with exchanging love with his intimate devotees, still he carries out many other tasks as well through his energies and agencies. So this is quite logical. And the scientific community, they are themselves examining different energies, and they're coming across new ways energies work. For instance, the levitation. You know, there is some experiments done by tweaking the energies. They can get something to levitate. So they're exploring. So it's not too difficult for people to understand that Krishna or the Supreme Divine Being has multifarious energies which act in various ways. So looking at it like that, isn't it? So practically, what we see around us is, if we look at it on a practical level, we see everything is created, everything is maintained, and everything is destroyed. So on a practical level, we see all these things occurring. So the inquisitive mind will say, what is the cause of this creation? What is the cause of the maintenance? What is it that's causing things to break down and to rot and to disappear from life? So this is the intelligence of a man. He will think like that, and he will make inquiries. And our process is to inquire from one who has knowledge of these sources. Therefore, all throughout the world, there are theological texts that describe these things. And if one is intelligent, he can, as well as approach the scientific source, he could approach that theological science. He could ask the theologians, what do you say is the cause of the creation and destruction and the manifestation of this world? So it's not too... It's practical. So this is our answer to atheists. But some of them will not accept. And there's nothing much you can do about it. You can only present your argument and then leave it to them to decide by their own intelligence. You can only logically say to them, well, look all around you. Do you have any experience in your own life of something happening by chance? You know, in every single aspect of your life, there is order. So it is illogical. It doesn't make any sense to consider that something would come about simply by an explosion through in space, and then the planet cooled and sort of formed, and then water came from a meteorite in space that hit the Earth. And all these things are highly illogical, actually, when you really think about it. It's not very logical at all. So you can give these arguments to them. So, yeah. So Darwin's theory and the scientific theory is one of definitely Hare Krishna, as one of observing matter and interpreting what they see. And an interesting thing, if you look up scientific theory, they'll even accept that themselves. A scientific theory is never fact or law until it's repeatedly observed. You're sick, Vishnu Mahabhu. Still you're coming to the temple as a dedicated man. Yes, scientific theory is never fact or law until it is repeatedly observed in laboratories. Then it becomes fact or law. Otherwise, it's not fact or law. They'll admit that. I was talking to one atheistic scientist recently, and he gave that knowledge to me. He said, actually, a scientific theory is never fact or law. I thought, oh, really? So then, you know, sometimes someone can give you, even a demon can give you some knowledge, you can use it. And since he said that, I kept quoting him. He gets fed up with me quoting it. But it's a very important point, that Darwin's theory is not fact and it's not law. Only if it's repeatedly sin in laboratory conditions, does it become fact or law? So Prabhupada's simple argument that he gave many years ago still stands true to this very day, that life comes from life. And if you want to mix, if you think that life comes from chemicals, then go to the laboratory, mix the chemicals, and produce some little microscopic creature. And they cannot do it. For years and years and years they've been trying to do it. They cannot do it. And no one will tell you that they have. So this, you know, so this is the way to counteract some of the things that they say. We can sympathize with them, because they're actually gyanis, so they're better than kamis. At least they're trying to figure out what life's about, isn't it? They're thinking, what is life? And they're trying to figure it out, so we can give great respect to them as gyanis. Well, we have to point out their limited their interpretations of what they see. Actually, all energies stem from consciousness. It is consciousness. Like, this body is full of consciousness. And that's another way you tell these guys. You just tell, actually, what is consciousness? They cannot tell you. Even the greatest neurosurgeons, they can't tell you. They'll give you some explanation that, oh, something little organ developed and that is causing consciousness. But it's the greatest mystery to them, what is consciousness? So it's best stick on that point. Okay, never mind religion, never mind anything, never mind all their theories about the changes and the transitions of species. Just ask them, what is consciousness? Can you produce consciousness? And in the beginnings of Darwin's observation, actually Darwin, he got his ideas from the Greeks, because there were some Greek philosophers. They themselves looked at biology and they were thinking, actually, I wonder if all these chemicals and these could mix together. It might be the cause of consciousness. So Darwin got his thinking from them, and then he took it. But he started his theories much later, and he doesn't explain the origins of consciousness. So why would we want to accept a theory that's missing the beginning? And, you know, it's I can't understand why someone would follow a theory that doesn't have a beginning. You're just following it in the middle. So it's totally illogical. So material scientists, yeah, as I was saying, consciousness is the driving force behind everything in this life, our consciousness. Because the scientists will look at the brain and say, no, it's the brain that's causing consciousness. But sometimes the brain can be damaged, but still consciousness is there. And even if the brain is so badly damaged, consciousness is detected through the energy of the body, through the heartbeat. But once consciousness leaves the body, there is no heartbeat, there is no brain pattern. Something's left. You ask them, what is left the body? It is consciousness. This is so simple for the simple. But these guys can't understand. And even consciousness is responsible for all energies. Every single atom that's making up this Krishna says, I enter into every atom. So conscious, the supreme consciousness is there. So ultimately everything is conscious. Everything is conscious. And Krishna is the cause of that consciousness. So this mechanistic, they look at the world mechanistically. Therefore, Sariputta Prabhu wrote that book, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science. And it's a very good book to read. And there we can see that the causes of life are never a mechanistic process, but rather consciousness through the supersoul entering into the every single atom. And even in our life, Krishna is sitting in our heart, and as it says here, which we'll discuss later, he is witnessing the activities. So we must preach very boldly to the living, the poor souls who are bewildered by Darwinism and consider Darwinism to be a fact, practically speaking. But you have to recall the point. It's never a fact or theory, never. Not until it's been proved in a laboratory and observed repeatedly. And what is it we're looking for them to observe? Consciousness arising from matter. So keep them to that point. Never mind their later speculations about transitions of fossils. But even then, Sariputta will say, well, there's no linear transition of fossils. So then they come up with this punctuated equilibrium. And then they come up with this other bush theory, a branch. See, these guys, one thing they're defeated, they come up with another paper, but they're very crooked fellows. Very crooked. Very clever, very crooked, like a politician. You speak to a politician, you never get a straight answer. Same with these guys as well. They're super intelligent. They know how to lie really well and make up stories. And most people follow them because they're innocent. And that's another thing you can say to these people. Oh, because sometimes you talk to these guys. And you say, okay, where did you get your idea from? Is it your own idea? Because in the Vedas it's described munis, right? A muni is someone comes up with an individual idea. But these guys are not munis, they're simply followers. They simply follow what they are told to do. And a few of them are a bit more intelligent and they come up with these papers to try to explain, well, it could be like this or it might be like that, like this. So they have to admit they are followers. So we are also followers. Well, why are we following this process and not that process? This is an interesting point. Why we have this faith that we follow this process? And these guys, they're very intelligent. Why are they not following this process? Why can't they see what we have? What is faith, in other words? Sukriti, isn't it? Sukriti. If you do enough Sukriti, you get faith. So this is why the Hare Krishna movement is so important. If you want to defeat Darwinism, go and chant the holy name, go and distribute books, go and distribute prasadam, because you're creating so much Sukriti. And that's the way to change them. You won't change them by intellect, hardly. They need to do Sukriti. Then the Sukriti builds up, then they have the faith. This is what our acharyas say. So it's very important for them to get the Sukriti. But what type of Sukriti do they need? Bhakti Mukhi, the Sukriti that connected them to divinity. Divine Sukriti. So divine Sukriti will come about through divine activities. So we must make sure all our activities are divine. Now, what is divine activity? How do we know an activity is divine and when it's not divine? So we know what, in other words, what is the Hare Krishna movement doing? How do we know it's all divine? Anyone like to say? How do we know that the Hare Krishna movement is all its activities are divine? It's an important point. We must know. Actually, all our activities are divine. They're all bona fide. There's ways and means, of course. Of course, we know. It is by following the acharyas, we know our activities are divine, because each of our acharyas is following the order of the previous acharyas, and we have a chain of disciplic succession. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is Prabhupada's guru, and Srila Gokushwara Das Babaji Maharaj. Just by hearing, one time Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he heard his Guru Maharaj, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, chant some verses glorifying Srimati Radharani. So just by hearing that sound vibration entered into and such influence on his life. So our divine activities are inspired by divinity, and divinity comes to us in the form of the Sadguru, the pure devotee. His activity, he directs what divinity is and what divinity isn't. Therefore, in all our activities in the Hare Krishna movement, we must make sure that we are constantly alert that our activities remain divine. Of course, there's many debates on this matter within our society. My view is that we should actually have a constitution of ISKCON, which I think they're developing slowly, because a constitution of ISKCON with clearly Prabhupada's directions and thoughts and how he thought his society should carry on will give us the security of divine activities. Otherwise, who knows what might happen in, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years' time. We might start thinking that we're divine. So let's get that together. I believe it's being worked on, which is very nice, because that would give us that security. So we accept knowledge through because of the divine source. Now, we carry out an experiment in our life because we're also scientists. We study consciousness. What is consciousness? What's its origins? What's its perfection? How is it contaminated by the material energy? How is it that the mind is working? How is it that there's different intelligences? Like that. And what is the essence of life? What is the essence of living? These things we study. And these activities are spoken about and demonstrated by Krishna himself. Because if you look at his life, Krishna in his activities in Goloka Vrindavan, this is the essence of life, simply satchitana, enjoying, bliss, loving exchanges. Because everyone is looking for that in this life. They want this loving exchange. So Krishna, actually this loving exchange is the essence of life, you're quite right. But this is how to get it, through selfless, through not separate interest, no separate interest, dedication, devotion, sweetness, beauty. That is the nature of the soul. So if we associate with people or our acharyas who possess that energy, and we hear and chant about these activities, we'll get to understand, oh, this is what life is all about. So the liberated devotee, he's studying that topic. He studies consciousness, and he studies the topmost levels of consciousness, and he actually enters into that realm after mature devotional service, and he relishes the topics and exchanges of love. So this is Krishna consciousness in the highest field. But in order to become dedicated and devoted, you cannot just jump straight to Goloka Vrindavan, as we know. You have to become dedicated and devoted in this life, as we are right now. This is called Varnashram. Srivansam is giving some class on Varnashram. This is actually, Varnashram is already taking place. Everywhere you see Varnashram, isn't it? You'll see an intellectual, you'll see an administrator, you'll see a working man. It's already in place, actually. We just have to inject it with Krishna consciousness. Then it becomes Devi Varnashram. So if by your own activities you link that to Krishna through your own personal, and then you will escape the conditioning of the mind and the body, and you'll then be able to acquire your original spiritual form. This process is twofold, internal and external. Mahaprabhu showed himself. He externally did his preaching, but internally he was trying to find himself, actually, because we were discussing the other day how Mahaprabhu wants to understand Radharani's mood, so he has, Srila Gogavinda Swami, he has stolen the mood of Radharani. And then in Mahaprabhu's Leela, we were discussing with Govinda the other day, Gadadha is the personality who is Radharani without that mood, right? And she is following because Marble was taking him with, so she's following him around like that. So she's in a very precarious situation, in one sense, you could say, because she's without her. And therefore, it's described that, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he worships Gaur Gadadhar. And some of the acharyas say, why is that? Because when you worship someone who is in the most desperate state, if you render service to someone who's really need, they become very grateful to you, and they remember that. And then later, because Radharani will get her, obviously. And then, so this is described. That's why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, he wanted to, he thought that Kurukshetra was the highest place of all, not Vrindavan, Kurukshetra. Because in Kurukshetra, there Srimati Radharani was just about to come back to Krishna. So the heightened mood was there. Krishna's right there. I want to take you back to... So all these... this great science of love is given. So, you know, never mind a few transitional fossils or... But why are these guys so involved in that? Why not get involved in something much higher, which is consciousness? And what is consciousness and what it's capable of? Isn't it? Even materially speaking, telepathy. You ask these guys, explain telepathy. They won't. They cannot. They won't even enter into that realm of telepathy. This is another point that Sataputta brings up in his preaching. You must discuss these things: telepathy, clairvoyance, hypnosis. How is all these things taking place if we're just a mechanistic machine? They don't want to touch that energy. So, you know, what to do. So, let's go on to other things now. So Krishna himself, in his form, we know, if we study the second canto of the Bhagavatam, how Krishna himself, he glances over material nature and sets the whole process, he impregnates the living entities into this matter, and through the processes of Aniruddha, Pradyumna, they take on the mind, the intelligence. So Krishna's manifesting all these energies. He's placing the jiva inside, and the individual jiva, with his subtle body, in his, if you notice, you think like your mother or father, right? Sometimes you think, oh, I feel like my father sometimes, or I feel like my mother. Because you take on, you're taking on some of their subtle body. But then you have your previous life, that's also carried with you. So you're trapped inside this weird world of this body and mind. And this is our predicament. But actually there's higher dimensions, and liberation means to become completely free from this body and mind. This is done through devotional service. If you act devotionally. Now Krishna claims in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrevamso Jiva Loka Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Manasana India Prakriti Stanika. These are my parts and parcels, but they're struggling very hard with the six senses and the mind. They're struggling very hard, like anything they're struggling. They're identifying with this matter, and they're chasing down so many dreams, wealth, wife, family, this, that, the other. This phantasmagoria, this world of illusion, and devotees themselves have become detached in this. Sometimes we get caught up in all this as well. My son, my daughter, my bank balance, my house, my this, my that. I want Krishna, but I also want this to be very stable. If I don't have this stable, then I'm going to be disturbed. So actually, to some extent, that has to be there. You have to have stability in your life. If you take away someone's wealth from their family too early, well, we are just making them completely mental. They're finished. Because they have not got Krishna. But Rupa Goswami and the Sikhs or something, they were very wealthy, but they gave it all up because they had Krishna. So our process is to gradually attain that consciousness. When you're in that consciousness, it doesn't matter what happens to you externally. But of course, as Prabhupada says, if your dear ones part from you, it's natural that you will become, you know, emotional about that, isn't it? We cannot be cold-hearted. Oh, as my mother or my father's died, doesn't matter, they're not the body. You know, naturally, it is inherent in the soul, emotions. So, like that. Now, before we leave this topic, the jiva, he's a fragmented part of Krishna. And therefore, Krishna also says, it is achinta beda beda tattva. Jivara surupaya Krishna nitya das Krishna tasya shakti beda beda vikash. So we are one with Krishna, but also different, that we know. I'm just coming to the end of this thing. But so Prabhupada mentions here how the jiva, he is shackled in these chains. Isn't it? Shackled. What is it? What is these shackling chains? False ego. That I am not divine. I don't have any connection with divinity. I am the enjoyer. This is the consciousness. And of course, the very binding thing in this world is the attraction between men and women or women and men. This is the most binding attraction of all. If you can give up that, then you are liberated. This is what shackles us, and it shackles every single species of life. So if we perform actions with this body in the right way, we will actually slowly come to knowledge. So there's qualities in the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance. So if we learn to be very regulated, then we will stop this moving, traveling, looking for this. Paramananda, Paramati, Kona, Bhagavanji, Guru, Krishna, Vishai, moving, looking this, here, there, everywhere. We will give up that, and we will get the bhakti lata bij. Shura bhakata charuneno, bhajan anukula, bhakata seva padama siddhi, prema lati karamula. So serving the, taking the dust from the feet of the devotee is one thing. That is okay. That is conducive. But actually, perfection is to serve the lotus feet of the devotee. Because serving the devotee is even better than serving Krishna, because he's directly linked with Krishna. And Krishna's more kind to us through his devotees sometimes. You know, the story of... what was that devotee who was cursed, and then Ambarish, wasn't it? Yeah. He Krishna would not give him relief directly. He said, no, you have to go, you've offended Duvasa. Yeah, Duvasa, he had offended Ambarish. And then Krishna said, no, you have to go to him, because there's a demonstration that Krishna works through his devotee. So the suffering, Prabhupada mentions suffering and enjoyment in this, that the super soul is in the heart. He experiences the suffering and the enjoyment. He wants the living entity to free himself from this energy. So the parents, they know that. If you have a child, you'll know that their happiness and their distress is your happiness and distress, isn't it? So Krishna, where's that coming from? Everything in this material world has a source, and the source is Krishna. So there's nothing separated from Krishna in this world. Everything is Krishna. It's all connected to Krishna. Anything you see here is a reflection of something. If you go down in the bushes and see beautiful flowers, very sweet smelling flowers, they're connected to Krishna. Because in the original spiritual world, these flowers are harvested every morning by the Radharani's followers. They make beautiful scents from them. They string garlands from them. They pick various fruits and flowers. So everything here, its origin is there and is utilized in loving service to Krishna. So therefore, nothing here is by chance. It is here to help us remember Krishna. And actually, the interesting thing was that Prabhupada gave such an amazing demonstration of that, because I was reading recently, Prabhupada, as he was leaving this mortal world, so to speak, it was not so far away from he was leaving, but Prabhupada was dealing with one of his properties in Vrindavan, which some devotee had rented or sublet or something. And there was the electric bill that this devotee was using. He was using up the electric. So Prabhupada got into a conversation about that electric bill. And, now you'd think, would you not, that why is Prabhupada speaking about electric bill in Vrindavan? He's, surely there's higher topics to consider, isn't it? You think like that. But no, this electric bell is Krishna's. So he really connected Krishna to this world. There's nothing outside of Krishna. It's all. So the most expert devotees, they know how to utilize this energy perfectly. They see nothing outside of Krishna. And they're very practical, and they work on two levels, internal and external. So this is a symptom of a very advanced devotee. You'll see he's highly organized in this life, and he's highly organized in his own spiritual consciousness. He is, his spiritually conceived mental body, you could say. He's absorbed in these leelas, and he's experiencing and relishing the topics. So this is a very important point. If we want to see who's advanced devotee, you know two things. He's very efficient in everything he does. He sees everything in Krishna's service, very expert. But he's also taking the bhakti. Now, a point to be brought here is this. One time Krishna was being given some prasad by one of his devotees. And this devotee gave Krishna a banana skin and threw the banana away. And then Krishna was eating this banana skin. And this was, but actually Krishna said, no, I'm accepting the bhakti. It's the bhakti I'm looking for. I do not care that the banana is in the bin and he's given me, because I love, it's the bhakti that he did it in. So that's to be taken in context, but the point is, if you're very expert materially and you don't have the bhakti, Krishna's not so interested. Isn't there was one, didn't someone ask Krishna for lunch before the Kurukshetra war? Duryodhana. He had this nice, and he didn't want to come, right? Huh? Oh, banana, there we are. To see. So Krishna is looking for the bhakti, not so much, but I better have both things. And this is where you can see with Prabhupada, his demonstration of the ISKCON movement. Because the Gaudiya Math are very nice devotees, actually. Very nice, very sweet devotees. But they can't, some of them just haven't got that other dimension to their lives where they can, with dimension of organizing practically and getting a preaching movement underway, which Prabhupada did. So you could say perhaps that was a further surrender. That's a debatable point. But even the great acharyas, they'll tell you, Prabhupada's godbrothers, they'll say it was a great sacrifice, great faith. They glorify him for doing what he did, because he took on all that stuff. And he formed societies and so on and so forth. Okay, I think I was going to mention sufferings and enjoyments and karma, but I think we've gone over another time maybe. So thank you very much for hearing me out. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments about scientists or anything else? All accepted?